Well, Happy New Year. Strange as that seems, but I still, even after all these years and spending time with the church year, I still get a bit of a charge out of the fact that it's different than the calendar year and gives me a different way of thinking about things. And here we are on the first Sunday of Advent, and we begin the process of preparing for the celebration of Christ coming to earth as a human baby. And so it shouldn't be too surprising that we begin with hope. The first Sunday of Advent is the Hope Sunday. We light the hope candle. But why do we end up going to some of these passages of Scripture that we have this morning? I mean, some of them are a little more clear than others. When we look at Jeremiah, we see very strongly looking forward. And we remember that Jeremiah was being a prophet at a time when it wasn't all that wonderful to be a prophet, or for that matter, it wasn't all that wonderful to be a member of the nation of Israel. And so when Jeremiah writes, he says that, don't worry, God will fulfill the promises that he has made, and that he will make a righteous branch sprout from David's line. In those days, Judah will be saved and Jerusalem will live in safety. And it's obviously a message of hope. And to a people who had very little to hope for, everything that they had known, everything they depended on, had been turned on its head. So that makes sense that Jeremiah is saying, look, let's look to the future. Let's see what's going to happen and enjoy the anticipation, even if we're not in the middle of it. And then we look at Thessalonians. And here we have Paul talking about joy and thankfulness, about prayer. But we see that Paul is hoping that he'll be able to come to them and be part of filling in what they lack, theologically or pastorally, whatever it is, that he will be able to do that. And he asks that the way might be cleared, that he could go there. And it's a hopeful message. It's talking about things that may happen, that haven't happened yet. There's two ways, in a sense, there's two ways to look at hope. One is taking the reality of the past, or sometimes even the present, and projecting it into the future. For example, we'll talk about how we hope that whatever's going on will continue. Sometimes we use the language of hope almost ironically when we say, well, you know, I hope my kids still put up with me after I do whatever, you know, is about to irritate them, or whatever the case might be. And we say that on the basis of what we already know. We hope that we will continue to be friends with our friends because we've been in the past. We have no reason to think otherwise. But Paul's talking about a different kind of hope, not so much built solely on the past as on something trustworthy in the future. May the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else, just as ours does for you, is a hopeful message based on the reality of God's willingness to strengthen people in this way, to build these things into us, to make our love increase. And that's the hope that comes, to a certain extent, from the past, from our understanding of God in this case. But it's not so much hoping that what has happened will happen again, but it's putting our trust in someone trustworthy. Hoping that your pews will hold you up isn't much hope, really. It's not terribly, you know, you're not exercising a lot of trust there. When your child builds you a bench out of snow, hoping it will hold you up is a completely different kind of hope. When God says, I'm going to do this new thing, the hope is built much more on our sense that, well, the hope, the trust we have in pews than in what we have in children and their ability to architecturally apply themselves to snow. what Paul is saying is that while this hasn't perhaps happened before, God has demonstrated himself to be faithful in the past. And so when we look hopefully to the future, we do so on that basis. So those make sense. In, you know, there's hopeful messages there. There's Jeremiah saying, you know, I realize everything looks terrible, but it's going to get better soon. And Paul says, good things are on their way. God will do this for you. And then we go to Jesus and his words in the Gospel according to St. Luke. He says, look forward to some really awful stuff. It thankfully doesn't leave it there. But it's always struck me as a bit of a stretch. When we look at this whole section, the New International Version has a little heading to signs of the end of the age, which I think is as good as anything. But this whole section, most of chapter 21, is all about what's going to happen. And it's all pretty awful. There's pestilence, and things in space aren't going to work properly, and people are going to faint. They're so worried about what's coming next. And Jesus says, when these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. And it's another message of hope. And he has the parable of the fig tree. And you wouldn't think this would be a parable. It's more like, let's take a look at nature and remind ourselves that we see signs that tell us that the seasons are changing. I think I recall mentioning when I came one Sunday, and overnight all the trees decided to just eject all their leaves. On Saturday it was, you know, there was fall and the leaves had turned color, and Sunday when I got up, the streets were covered with leaves. Well, when that happens, we don't think, oh no, all the trees are dead, something terrible has happened. We think, okay, it's definitely fall. There's no getting past it now. We are definitely in fall, and that means winter is on its way. And we get up in the morning, we have to scrape the windows, and yeah, there's no snow on the ground, but we know that winter is here. And that it's shortly going to be doing all the things that winter does. We look at these things not as signs that this is what is now going to be forever. Even the most dramatic of people who either believe or disbelieve in climate change don't say that what we're in today is what's going to be forever. Nobody does that. They say, this is a season. This is the way the world works. And Jesus says that there's another season, if you will, and it's the season of the period of time from when he left this earth at the ascension to when he comes back. And he says there are some things that are going to happen, much like you're going to see trees sprouting out leaves, which means that summer is coming, that there are other things that are going to come as harbingers of what is coming next. And he doesn't pull any punches, saying that these things are not very pleasant. But he does say that this won't be the end of everything. We have ongoing problems with the translation of Luke 21:32. You know, I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. And there's a little text note that says, or race, because that's what it should be. It's not a very good translation. Jesus is not saying that the people who are alive at that moment are going to see this all happen. What Jesus is saying, hearkening back to God's promise to Noah after the flood, he's going to say, look, human beings and people who believe in me in particular are not going to be erased from the earth. He's saying that he will continue to have his hand on his followers and on creation overall, that people will continue, even though this seems terrible, even though adult people contemplating what's going on pass out from fear, it won't be the end of everything. And that is a message of hope. If we take seriously what Jesus says, we have to take seriously all the things he says, not just the things we like. We need to take seriously the fact that Jesus says, whether we like it or not, things are going to get worse for a period of time before they ultimately get better. And we can look at that in all kinds of ways, and we can look at it very literalistically if we wish, or we can look at it symbolically if we wish. But I think we need to pay attention to the fact that Jesus says that there are going to be things that come that we really wish wouldn't, but that that isn't going to be the last word. Jesus is absolutely clear that no matter what comes, no matter how frightening it is, no matter how terrifying it might be, or for that matter, how inane and boring it might be, it doesn't matter. Whatever comes won't be the last word. God always keeps the last word for himself, and the last word is hope. It's hope. We look at what he says is going to happen. And the last verse that was read for us is, "Be always on the watch and pray that you may be able to escape all that is about to happen and that you may be able to stand before the Son of Man." And some people have looked at that as a very fearful verse, as, you know, hope against hope that somehow you'll make it, which is not what Jesus is saying at all. He's not saying that, you know, you should pray every second of every day because if not, you know, this is just going to be really hard. Hardly anybody's going to make it. No, that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that you need to be aware. You need to pay attention to what's going on around you. But you need to remember that he's already said that that's not the end result. I mean, we look at our society, our culture, the world in which we live, and we see many tremendously significant advances, many things we would prefer not to do without. Medicine, transportation, all these things that we have that our great-great-grandparents couldn't even imagine. And the temptation is for us to look at what we have now solely from the positive sense and say, well, Jesus must have been mistaken. But really, things are getting better all the time. Well, yes and no. We live longer, to be sure, but we get divorced more. We have access to more information now than we've ever had before. We have more drug abuse, more physical abuse. We have more abandonment of families. We have every bit as much war as we've had for a long time. And I'm not saying that it isn't better in many ways, because obviously it is, but let's not kid ourselves to say that the world is on this inexorable movement towards perfection as it is, because it's not. And when we look at Jesus' words, and when we look at what John wrote in the Revelation and other such places, and we see bad things coming, whether we look at those trying to make some literal sense out of what they are, or whether we look at them from a more symbolic sense that things will continue to get bad in different ways, even while things continue to get better in other ways, it doesn't matter which one we focus on, because Jesus is going to come back. This is the way that we begin Advent, as we think of him coming for the first time, is to remind ourselves that he's going to come back. And the return of Jesus is always kind of problematic. We want to know exactly when, exactly what it will look like, and all of those things. And it really isn't that clear in the Bible. His return is clear. There's no getting around that. But exactly what that looks like, or what the triggers will be, or anything else, well, that's very much open for discussion. I sometimes get in trouble for saying things like that, but really, when you look at most of the doctrines in the Bible, most of them we don't have any disagreement about. It doesn't matter whether you're a Pentecostal or a Presbyterian. It doesn't matter whether you're Catholic, whether you're Greek Orthodox, whether you're Protestant. You know, we agree that Jesus is the Son of God. You know, that we don't have any problem with that. If the return of Christ was so clear, as some people will have you believe it is, then I'm pretty sure we all would have agreed on the same thing. It's confusing, and that's okay. In some ways, it's easier to live in hope when you don't know all of the details. You just know the outcome. if nothing else, sometimes think that's the only way people would ever get anything surgically repaired. A friend of mine at work just got her ACL fixed. She tore it playing soccer a while ago and finally, you know, got it fixed. And said, you know, if I would have known it was going to be like this, I might have been willing to live with just having a limp forever. I remember when I got my nose fixed, same thing. If I would have known exactly how miserable that first 24 hours would have been, I probably wouldn't have gotten it done. But we look to the end, and sometimes not knowing all the steps to get there is actually better for us. The hope that we have is that in the same way Jesus came as a baby, he will return in glory. And whether that happens this afternoon, or next year, or 1,000 years from now, doesn't change the fundamental reality that he's going to come back. And it also doesn't change the fundamental reality of his ongoing care and presence with us now. I like the fact that Advent doesn't change from year to year. The scripture might. But we always begin Advent with hope. The Sundays are the same, so that every year, at least once a year, we'll spend some time thinking about hope and how much hope we have. One of the most comforting words that Paul has is where he says that we don't grieve as others do because of the hope we have in God. He doesn't say we don't grieve, because of course we do. But he says we don't grieve as the way others do, because we have hope. When we look at the things in our own personal lives or in the larger picture of the world and we say, how could this? This is terrible. We have hope because of Jesus, because there's reality within us, because of the witness of Scripture, church history, all of these things that convince us that this is a trustworthy book, that the words of God recorded for us in Scripture are true. We don't know what all of them mean, but the ones that we do know, we are completely confident in those. And he's going to come back. It will make sense. We look forward with hope, not with resignation. We're not just going to grit our teeth and somehow make it through the rest of our lives. We look forward with hope. And as we light a candle on this first Sunday of Advent, it reminds us that we have hope, that we have a reason to get up in the morning. We have a reason to do what we do. Sometimes I've said that without hope, there's nothing. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think when people are literally, actually hopeless, that there's nothing left. We're people of hope. Even in the midst of plenty, even in the midst of want, whatever it is, we have hope. Because we know that Jesus hasn't abandoned us. We know that no matter how bad it gets, he's always going to be with us. And he's been sending messages of hope through Scripture, through our own experience, ever since he left. So as we move into the Advent season, let us move forward with hope. Not just for these next few weeks where we hope for a good Christmas, but as we move into the rest of our lives, into whatever comes next, knowing that we always have Jesus with us and that we always have hope.